You are now listening to Shotgun Sports, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world, we talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, world-class instructors, gun clubs, target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
If you or your club are looking to purchase Pro-Matic traps, make sure you get in touch with Rick Hemingway. He is the largest Pro-Matic dealer in the country and can handle everything for you. Rick offers new and pre-owned units and exceptional service. He also has a huge rental fleet, so no job is too big or small. Rick is well known for setting championship-style targets and designing unbelievable courses, so make sure you ask him about his turnkey services for skeet, trap, and five-stand. Contact Rick today at backwoodsquailclub.com or call 843-546-1466. Okay, so we're down here in Quail Creek Plantation, and I got Anthony Matarese in the room with me along with Tom C. And we want to just go over a few things that it interests Tom, it interests me to watch Anthony shoot, and I want to kind of ask him a few questions about that, and we'll go into some other things as well. But
sure.
Welcome to the show, Tom. Ant, glad
Thanks
to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yep. So how's the Gator Cup been so far?
It's good. It's been a fun shoot. Great. You know, the weather's awesome. I got my family with me, so the kids have a good time just seeing people that they don't get to see all the time. They've got some of the teenage girls, they, you know, like to hang out with them, and they treat them real well. So we're having a great time. I've shot okay across the board.
Yeah.
Could have hit a few more, but I could have hit a few less.
What do you think about the target so far?
I think they've been pretty stout. I shot both prelims on Friday. One was pretty user-friendly. The other one was pretty stout. Feet test, I thought, was good overall. You know, nothing crazy. Yeah. Five stand's pretty tough.
Yeah.
The blue main yesterday is pretty tough. About as hard as I would think you'd see for, you know, any championship-level course. So,
yeah.
They're good, though. I mean, not much you can complain about if you're not afraid of a hard bird. If you're a newer shooter, you're going to get your feelings hurt a little bit here.
Now, how is there any special techniques that you had to use to shoot targets this week?
There's a little bit of everything out there, you know, so it's not necessarily, that's where some of the newer, less experienced shooters are going to get beat up a little bit. It's not so much, that you have to have a certain technique for a certain bird. Here, there's a lot of stuff that you've got to know everything.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you've got to be able to make a decision and shoot this bird first or shoot that bird first or shoot one bird quicker. The courses are, you know, there's from the Fitas with some of the driven birds there, the five stand just tough on layout number one and the blue yesterday. You know, you've got to be able to do everything. You know, if there was any criticism I would give to the couple of the pairs on the blues, just, If you're not able to apply a technique on some of those that allow you to shoot very quickly, then you don't have a very good chance on the second bird. You know, that would be the only criticism that I would give of the target setting, is that there's a few folks out there that, you know, whether it's age or experience, just aren't able to do that. But at the end of the day, they're shooting against people of, you know, like classes and age. So,
right.
It's still a competition. The best man's going to win.
Right. What do you think, Tom?
I agree with everything. It's been pretty tough. Of course, the wind has been, you know, made it a little worse. I think people's opinions are probably getting a little frustrated and everything, but the wind is playing a big part in some of those courses. I think the blue shot a little tougher yesterday because of the wind, and pretty windy today. So I mean, it's pretty fair.
Yeah,
all the way across
right now. So whoever's on that 11:30 on blue,
they're going to have an issue.
You're going to have your work cut out for you.
Yeah. 10 towers.
My 91 might look pretty good.
10 towers was on the blue course out of 17 stations.
Right.
Station number 10, we talked to Fred about that station. They always put something crazy in that corner. How far was the tower?
It's probably a 70-yard crosser. Last year they had it over on the left side. I feel like it was a very similar bird this year, just from the other side. You know, last year I hit it both times. This year I missed it both times. I mean,
so you hit
I didn't really feel like I did anything wrong. I just 70-yard crosser that's ripping. You know, you got to make a decision if you're going to take your time, if you're going to shoot it quick. You know, I just simply missed it. You know, somebody was like, what did you do? I'm like, I missed it. It's hard. Okay. Sometimes you're going to hit them. Sometimes you ain't. You know, you're overthinking it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if I walk back in there and do it today, I do the same damn thing I did yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. What about the one driven down into the ground? That was a true pair.
I killed
was
that report? One. Report pair. Report, I killed that one both times. I missed the big belly bird.
Yeah. Tom and I were shooting five stand a little bit ago and was pulling off, saw you shooting, so we stopped to watch. And he pulled up, he noticed some good things to ask you about the way you shoot.
Yep.
And I wanted him to ask the questions because I thought it was pretty interesting at the questions he had.
Absolutely.
So I've always been a little intrigued with how you shoot because it's in terms of the mounting process, how you get into the gun and everything is a lot different than how I was taught.
Yep.
And you know, it's just different styles. And so, you know, I've always been taught from a young age to have a really, you know, loose mount, head a little, you know, not too tight, have light cheek pressure, and for various reasons, less tension. And when I watch you shoot, I notice, you know, you're really into the gun and you seem to be right down the rib. It appears, you know, at first glance that there's a lot of tension in that mount, but clearly there's not. Clearly there's a lot going on right.
Yeah, so I have, you know, I'm a huge advocate of no tension in your hands, okay, shoulders. I believe if your hands are loose, you know, and your grip is loose, you're not going to have that much tension in your shoulders. I really don't pull the gun into my body tight at all. So, you know, it's just, you know, just barely like, you know, you would, you know, if I always say if you had a cracked egg in your hand and you had to carry it to your neighbor and it was the last egg you had, that's how I hold the gun, you know, just firm enough that you don't drop it, but loose enough that you don't crack it because it's already cracked. I do have, you know, pretty good cheek pressure. I wouldn't say that I try to, you know, always have it buried, but it's not going any lower. I can tell you that, you know, so I always set my stock up where if I'm under my cheekbone, you know, with a, you know, good amount of pressure, it's in the same spot every time. If I'm shooting fitas, you know, and on all your quick shots where you got a, you know, a lower mount all the time in fitas, I don't really worry about my cheek pressure at all.
Yeah.
So my eye is going to be a little higher on the rib because if I mount the gun, it's time to fire, I fire. There's a lot of shots in fitas. You don't have the opportunity to stay with the clay. I feel like, you know, if you take that game, you know, and I'm shooting stuff fast or quickly, just contingent upon you have to kill the bird with your gun mount, I don't really worry about my head being locked down on the gun at all. And I kind of teach that your head's either going to be there or it's not. You're going to kill the bird on your move and your head's going to be there in the right spot or it's not. You're not going to really change that except through experience of mounting the gun. In sporting, I believe if your head is down on the gun, it's one, you know, the geometry makes sense for your face to be down on the stock. There's a lot of guys that don't put a lot of cheek pressure, you know, particularly if you look at like Joe Finese, Tom. I see if you watch somebody like David, though, he's a lot different than he used to be 10 years ago. You know, his head's in the gun. I seen him shooting in a shoot-off with me at the Nationals, and you know, he's leaning way forward. He's leaning over forward, more forward than me. Okay. You know, he's kind of the advocate of stand up, you know. And that's something I've struggled with my whole career. When I was a kid, I was tall and lanky. I leaned forward a lot, get in the gun, you know. I've struggled my whole career to stand up because you get too far forward. It's not good. But I think you can be too erect as well. You know, you go watch the best trap shooters in the world, whether it's international trap or ATA trap, you know, a lot of those guys are every international trap shooter in the world has firm cheek pressure. Okay.
Yeah.
Because they don't know where the bird's going. So their eye has to be in line with the barrel, right? So they can't anticipate anything. So it's theory, right? You can look at guys that have their head hard down into the gun. You can look at guys that have their head up. To me, the argument for having your head down makes more sense. Okay. You know, I always say, if you're explaining shooting and you drive over to the local university and you meet with the physics department, okay, yeah, and you're explaining to them what you're doing, okay, and what you're doing doesn't make sense to them, well, it doesn't make sense. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's my theory, right? You know, if you believe, look at the bird, put your eye in line with the gun, can't go anywhere. Okay. I'm never going to have a day that I go shoot where I happen to get my eye out of the line with the barrel and I missed a shot. So I'm not going to miss any shots because of that. I missed plenty of shots because the game's hard. Okay. Yeah. But I'm not going to miss any because my eye wasn't in the same spot. You know, and my eye's been in the same spot in relation to the barrel for the last 25 years.
Right.
You know, so my brain. Yeah. My brain knows that, you know, whether I'm having a good day or a bad day. So my head's down in the gun. I'm not intentionally trying to have some absurd amount of pressure, but it's down to the point where it can't. I always set my gun up where if I push down on it hard, I can still see a little bit of the rib, so I can't ever go down too far, get my eye behind the gun. My grip and my tension, I think what you see is, you know, you can kind of watch my face. I'm very – you know, when I'm trying my best and, you know, in the heat of the moment, I'm very intense mentally. Okay. You know, so it looks like, you know, it looks like I'm probably tight,
right,
but my body is as loose as I can get it. Do I screw up sometimes? Sure. You know,
right.
We all do.
Right.
I mean, I would have to 100% agree. That makes more sense if you're just sitting here thinking about it. It makes totally more sense to have your eye more in line with the gun as opposed to having a high. You know, your face higher on the gun and looking over the top of the rib. I mean, it just makes total sense. And the problem where I have, I think, and I've been working a little bit on my
right,
mount.
You're kind of caught in between a little
I'm
bit.
I'm kind of
right?
caught in between. And, you know, you get to a point where, for me, it's really hard to get that close to the gun and look at the target the same way as if I wasn't in
right.
the gun that hard. You
yeah.
know,
when your head's up, it's easier to keep your eye on the bird.
Right, okay. Exactly.
You know, I shot in the Super Sport with Todd and Todd Hitch. And at the end of it, he said, how do I look? I'm like, look great. He goes, well, I've been changing a couple things here and there. And he goes, I got my head on the gun. Okay.
Yeah.
So I said, you look good. I'm like, what, you know, what, I mean, is there anything particular, you know, he goes, oh, I'm trying to stay with the bird a little bit more,
yeah.
and connect with the bird a little bit more instead of just mounting fire, you know, if I don't have to. I said, no, you look awesome. He goes, well, what about my head? I'm like, what about it? Okay. He goes, down on the gun. I'm like, yeah, it looks good. He goes, it feels a lot different. He goes, but he goes, I think I need to do it. I'm like, makes sense to me. You know,
yeah.
I said, you know, you're a smart guy. Geometry. Your eye in the barrel going the same point.
Yeah.
You believe, look at the bird, Todd? He goes, yeah. I go, well, if you're looking at the bird and your eyes line with the barrel, can't be a bad thing. He goes, that's what I was thinking, right?
Todd,
you know, so,
yeah.
Todd and I live real.
I wasn't even exactly sure what the question he was, but he was asking me. He's
right.
asking me really about his head
yeah.
more than anything.
Yeah.
Todd and I live pretty close to each other, and so, you know, we shoot together, you know, real pretty often, I
yep.
would say. I mean, you know, he lives 3 hours away, but I go over that way quite a bit, and last year I was watching him shoot at the Camille Cup, and he was really off the gun. I mean, he was off about 2 inches. I mean, it wasn't even anywhere close, and, you know, he was struggling a little bit, and so next time I was over around his way, we just shot together, he and I, and I kind of told him what I was thinking. It's a little bit kind of between what you think and the way I originally, you know, started doing it.
Yep.
And, you know, that's nothing that Wendell ever told me to do, is keep your head off the gun. He never said that. I think it's
right.
just something
that
I...
He just never said that you had to do it either.
Right.
You
it's know? Just something I developed myself.
He advised against it.
Right.
Right. You know?
It's something I just developed myself, and I've recognized in the past year or so that, you know, I think that's something... I don't think I will ever be like you in the gun.
Right, because
but
that's not the way you started.
That's not
right.
the way I started, but I 100% agree with that. And that was one of the biggest questions I had when we were out there shooting is, you know, how do you stay that into the gun, and how do you not look at the barrel throughout, say, a long shot, a long incomer, or a long crosser?
Right, so I would say this, right? At the end of the day, you have two parts of the game. You've got feel, which comes from the eyes, okay? And you got the science of the game, which is the gun's got to be in the right spot to hit the bird. So your feel part finishes the shot, right? So that's what you're asking, like, how do I keep my eye on it if I'm in the gun too long or head more down, you know, or combination of both, right? seeing the bird at the end of the shot for your field portion, in my opinion, is all discipline. Okay, so it's you train yourself to do it. Most of my misses on, you know, that stalling crosser, you know, that's out there, you know, under pressure would be probably from getting a little careful. Okay. But at the end of the day, if I miss at the end of the season, I feel like a basic crossing shot is probably my strongest shot consistently, day in, day out. Give you time, 30 to 60 yards. You know, that's my bread and butter shot. Okay. So do I miss them because I take my eye off the clay and measure? Yeah. Okay. But I hit a lot of them because I'm stayed with the bird and my gun's in sync with the clay and I gave myself a bigger window. You know, the argument of being in the gun too much or too much down in the gun or running with the bird a little too long is, well, if you stay with the bird too long, okay, if you run with it and keep your head on the stock for that moment, you've got too much time to get – you got more time to be – to make a mistake. You got more time to get careful. You know, my argument is always, you also got more time to be right. Okay. You know, so your window is bigger if you can keep your eye on the clay, but that's a balancing act too. So depending on where you are in the game, okay, and where your confidence level is, if my confidence is real high, I can stay locked to the clay the whole time. If my confidence goes down a little bit, I'll shorten up the period of time that I run with the bird. So the thing that I believe too with that, which I know is different than how Tom was initially taught anyway, is I don't look at the clay until the end of the shot. Okay, so I just see a target. So my, you know, if I come up and shoot that stalling crosser or even that number one bird that you watched me shoot there in all the right five stand, I don't try to see anything on the bird, okay,
until the end
at
of
any
the
level of clarity until the gun hits my face, okay. So that was one thing that Todd and I talked about yesterday, because the national says I'm like out of sync or something with my eyes. I actually flinched some. I was like, you're looking at the bird too early, okay. You know, your move is ready, but your eyes were ready before your move was ready, okay. Make sure you just match up your move and your eyes.
Explain that, looking at the bird too early.
So he's seeing it real clear. His eyes are ready to fire, likely before the gun's ready to fire.
Okay.
Yeah. So he had like a mini flinch, he said, occasionally. Didn't know what was going on. He still was shooting well. I said, you know, we were just talking in conversation. I said, match your move up a little better with your eyes and ratchet down your focus towards the end of the shot. You know, don't, you know, try not to look at it so intently.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And on some of these birds that don't give you a great opportunity to see them clearly, I said, don't even try, let yourself see the bird. Don't try to see it too clear. You might be trying to see it better than the bird actually allows you to. He said, all right, I'll mess around with it this winter. As soon as I saw him this weekend, he's like, man, that really helped me. You know?
Yeah.
I kind of forgot all about what we even talked about.
you told me at Nationals a couple of years ago, you started shooting a new Beretta
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, right? Not yep. this year, last year.
New gun. I started, this was my first 2020 Gator Cup was my first, so a full year
right.
today, basically,
right.
or this weekend.
Right. And when you were getting your stock in line with Jim mm-hmm. at the Nationals prior to this mm-hmm. 2020 Gator Cup, you left your mid beat on as well as the front beat.
Yep.
And you said you do that to make sure you're in line with a gun.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a new stock. I built it to, I'm strong right eye dominant, okay, so I want my eye in the center of the barrel, okay. So I left my mid beat in so that when I would go home, you know, I got the gun as good as I could, okay. I changed my mount a little bit over the years, so I got a new stock because I needed a little bit more cast at the back of the gun to get it up away from my collarbone, get it a little bit more out of my shoulder, and I added a touch more drop. Okay, so a little bit more. I had very little in my other stock, and I've got maybe a little less than a half inch of drop in this stock. It was helping me on some high shots.
Right.
Anyway, so it was a little different than the stock I was shooting, but it was where I wanted it to be. I felt like my eye was in the middle of the gun. It sat in the pocket of my shoulder well. I left the mid-beat in because I wanted to make sure when I was out, you know, whether I mounted the gun at the house a little bit, or just out practicing, do a practice mount and check to make sure I'm down the middle. See, that's something that people, you know, advise against all the time. And if the person's off dominant or something, I can understand advising against it. But if you're a strong right eye dominant and you're a new shooter, checking your mount when you're out there practicing so your shooting eye is in line with the barrel is important, in my opinion. Okay, yep. So
makes sense.
You're putting it there, and you know that it's there. If you don't look there at all, you could be out of line, and you didn't realize it. Okay, so if you're so what I did that I got that gun literally in say I didn't get it as soon as I wanted. I got it in about early January, so I shot about 1,500 practice targets with it last year between January and middle of February to get used to the gun and the stock. The
right.
Barrel weight was the same. Everything's the same except the stock. And it was better, in my opinion. So it shouldn't be a problem. I shot about 1,500 targets with it. And when I was packing my gun case, I got a stone driveway. When I was packing my gun case up to come to the Gator Cup in 2020, I unscrewed the bead and threw it out in the driveway so I wouldn't be tempted to put it back in there when I came home, because it was the beginning of the season. I figured it's going to be as good as I want of get my in line, and then now I'm not going to, you know, worry about it too much. If I struggled though, if I was having a hard time, I would take all I would do is just file down like a toothpick or something, okay, and stick it in that hole just to do a practice mount or two for confidence. And I've shot with the stock that I had that kind of didn't fit me as well as I made some changes about 2-3 years before that, actually longer, probably 3 years before that. I went back in the middle of a season and put that mid bead back in because I was struggling, you know, so struggling. And what I realized, I was across the gun a little bit and put the toothpick in there actually, because I didn't have a bead, so I threw that one out and drug it too. And I just used that for the second half of the season. I went to the Nationals with that in there and you know, just grind it down so it's smaller. Than I use a small bead up front just so I can check it, just to, you don't need much, you just want to see if you're in line.
So is the toothpick still in there?
What's that? Is on that old gun?
I'm
not sure, to be honest with you. And I get it out with a small drill bit if I get it stuck in there.
I haven't heard that one. That's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I've got a few more questions, just kind of away from gun fit, away from mount, away from. Let me go back to something real quick. When I watch you shoot, there is no muzzle jump whatsoever. I mean, I know you've switched to 1 ounce shells. I have too in the past year or so, but that was something Justin and I both noticed when we were watching you shoot. Is, you know, you have literally no muzzle jump. Is that something you pay any attention to?
I never really have. To be honest with you,
I mean, that seems like a very well fitted gun.
I think it's
gun.
A huge mistake by a lot of amateur shooters. I'm shooting with a guy on my squad right now, and he's a pretty good shot. But when he takes the shot, his gun moves off. It's not necessarily the kick of the shell or the gun. He's mm-hmm. moves the gun drastically after bird one within his technique.
You
and
think
he'll
that's
be and he'll be
tension?
Asking like, why'd I miss that second one or that? You know, I go, because you're so far. You know, he's not moving in the gun well enough with his body. He's got too much arms. And
yeah,
he's starting
too
close
yeah.
to the bird instead of ahead of birds that need lead. But yeah, I mean, if the gun goes off and the gun doesn't move, it's got to be an advantage.
Right.
I have my gun ported. Why? You know, people always ask me, does porting help? Doesn't hurt. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's loud. Yeah. I don't give a shit it's loud. I got earplugs in anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're at a gun range. If you're worried about being loud, you know, you're in the wrong spot.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
So I don't care about the sound. I don't care about it being dirty. Okay. So it doesn't hurt. If it moved one tiny bit less and I hit one clay ever, then it was worth it. Okay. So
yeah.
It's ported. Does that help? I don't know. Can't hurt. You know, I think the gun fits me good. Okay, I'm in the gun, you know, so, you know, when the gun goes, if you're in your shoulder well and your head's down on the gun, can't go anywhere, you know, there's no,
right.
there's, your body has kind of a hold of the gun, it's wedged really between your head and your hands yeah. and your shoulder, so not intentionally,
right.
I guess.
So I was gonna ask you a few mental things. Say you have a round beginning of the year or whatever it may be, in the middle of the year. I know you've had rounds where you just start and you get two or three stands in, you miss a few birds you don't want to, and it's just like you can't get a good rhythm going, you can't get anything, you know, it seems like you...
Right, you're on a slippery slope the wrong direction.
Exactly. What do you, at what point, and what do you do to combat that feeling?
So, look, at the end of the day, confidence is not something that you know, I think all fear of missing or lack of trust is confidence based, and it doesn't take much to lose it. Sometimes it doesn't take much to get it back either. Okay, yesterday morning I didn't feel 100% confident. Why? You know, I shot great the afternoon prior. I just had just a doubt in my mind that, you know, and it cost me a few birds in the beginning of my round. What I know for certain is this, okay, and this is something that, you know, if people are, you know, a competitor of mine and you listen to it, all the best, right? You know, come on.
Right.
Rising tide lifts all boats. So, you know, I know for certain, okay, that when I am confident, I can allow myself to watch the clay and I don't need a lot of, I use kind of a visual of, all right, I'm going to see the bird this way. Okay. Not every clay you can see crystal clear, but some you can, some you can't. So I kind of have a picture of the bird in my mind. Okay. If I'm really struggling mentally, you become more conscious. Okay. As you become more conscious and aware of everything, I go to really occupying my, you know, I embrace being conscious and become more conscious about seeing the target. Yesterday I missed a bird on my last, I missed the only bird I missed in FITAS. I doubted myself a little bit. It was a bird that I needed to, you know, you had to kill it with your mount and take the shot. And I thought too much about seeing the bird. Okay. So it's always, in my opinion, a balancing act of what you're doing visually, from letting yourself see the bird to consciously seeing the bird to, you know, it's a balancing act that you have to figure out, that, you know, you're not going to restore confidence until you hit targets. So if you don't get a couple stands under your belt, then you're still in that slippery slope. Okay. If you can run a couple stands, you know, you kind of hit a flat spot here and you can regain your traction and maybe start going back up. So that's why the game's so hard, is that it only takes a second that, you know, I don't care what score someone has out there. By the looks at both courses, the birds look pretty challenging on both of them. Even the red looks a little harder than it does most years. So if somebody has a good score over on the blue and they got to go out there on the red this afternoon and they miss a couple in the beginning, anything can happen, right?
Yep.
You know, and same thing for the blue, even more so.
Mm-hmm.
You get out there and you get a couple bad ones to start, you got to, you know. When I got done that blue course, I said there's going to be a couple shooters that are really good top level shooters that people are going to look at the scoreboard and go, holy shit, so and so shot that.
That was
okay?
Me.
You know, and I, you know, I didn't know what anybody shot, but I could guarantee it was going to happen, because the difficulty level, what happens is when the birds are easy enough and you lose your confidence, okay, you can, you know, see the process and and barrel your way through the damn course and still shoot a 92 or 3. Okay. But if they're hard and you got to let it go, you know, and you start, you know, you're in trouble, you know. So it's a balancing act visually. You have to understand the difference between how you're seeing the bird when you're confident versus how you're seeing the bird when you're not confident. And I feel like I change gears, understand changing gears on that pretty well. I don't always do it fast enough, okay?
Yeah.
Or if the pressure is enough and your confidence is low enough, you're not going to shake it, okay? You know, so that's kind of my pet peeve sometimes, is about anything mental. You can train yourself and do all you want, okay? But the premise of everything working is being able to trust yourself. So if that truly goes away, whatever mental training you have isn't going to work, okay? You know, you have to have a plan B, you know, because inherently, you know, we're based upon kind of being in a perfect world where you're not in a perfect world anymore.
Right.
Right.
What, you're talking about the mental game. Is that something you really don't focus a lot on?
I mean, I focus a lot on it, okay, in regards to, you know, outside the box, I have a very good plan, rehearse. Yeah. I think that's one of the strongest, most important parts of your mental game is rehearse. This is what I'm going to do. I show myself like using my hand. When I step in the box, okay, I just got a couple simple steps of my routine, and I'm, you know, looking at the target. You know, use Tom, for example. He's a lot slower than me, okay? If he goes back a couple years ago, he's even slower, okay?
Yeah.
I think that's good when you're shooting good. You got to be careful when you're not, because I don't know what the hell you're going to do it all that time, except, you know,
worry.
Think about stupid shit that you shouldn't be thinking of.
Yep. Okay?
You know, so if you can understand to do what he's doing, do what I'm doing, do what he's doing before, okay? When you're able to be conscious of planning and then be able to concentrate on within your routine. So for mental, you got to plan, you got a routine, plan outside the box, routine in the box, make sure outside the box you're rehearsing your plan, unless you're the first guy, obviously. Build your confidence in any possible way that allows, from positive thinking, practice, experience, you know, telling yourself, removing negatives from your mind, etc. And then there's a very important part of the mental game in the box that's contingent upon the how you feel, okay, and how you feel and knowing what to do, okay, when you felt a certain way. Okay, so if you feel a certain way, I'm going to do X. From that might be related to your timing, your tempo. It might be related to how you're going to address trusting your eyes and seeing the clay. There's no question that the ultimate end failure becomes visual. So you can say, we can give you 1,000 reasons why you got to that. But something fails visually where you see the process differently, you see the relationship between the gun and the bird differently, something visual goes wrong.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about being in the box for a second. Do you pay a whole lot of attention to the people in front of you and what they're doing, or do you pay a whole lot?
Just watch the birds.
Just the birds.
The only time I really, you know, if I got someone trying to help them a little bit, you know, I'll kind of look over their shoulder, but I try to just watch the birds. You know, if I had somebody in front of me that I was trying to help them, could I do as good of a job as if, you know, I wasn't right before them? Probably not, because I'm really just watching the targets.
Yeah.
You brought up something just a minute ago, and Justin and I talked about it yesterday. We went out on the practice course, and he was kind of asking me a few questions, and we were shooting, and I was kind of helping him along a little bit. We talked about timing a lot. Is that something that when you practice, say, before you come down here, you work on the timing, like a start time, things
like
that?
Routine?
Yeah.
Now, I'm a big advocate in most of my practice. I'm just most of almost 99.99% of my practice, if I'm practicing, is just working on a specific bird and a specific technique, maybe do some pairs. You know, I shoot a lot of singles. I'm a big advocate that, you know, and this kind of happened to me, and so I shot more last year, and I'm going to shoot more this year. I'm a big advocate that you don't know what to do until you're in that scenario, right? So you can't practice at the house for your routine, because it's not the same, okay? You know, it doesn't count. If it doesn't count, what you're going to do in your routine, you can bullshit yourself probably and feel like you're more prepared, and maybe that helps your confidence.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
You know, and if you can bullshit your confidence, go for it, because it's gonna help you.
I don't think
you can't really test. You know, it's like, you know, I give this example. The person says, "I need to go and practice my routine." Well, you don't have a referee, you don't have a squad. Okay,
you don't have pressure.
You're shooting on a delay. Okay, there's no pressure. If you hit all the birds, nobody cares. If you miss all the birds, nobody cares. So you're not really in a real scenario, okay? I'd rather you just work on your technique, okay, build confidence that way, and then go shoot some local tournaments or get into the bigger tournament early and make sure you do the prelim. So one thing that happened for me, if you go back and look at my shooting history, say from like after 2010, I really quit competing, okay? You know, I'd shoot anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 registered targets. I went to the national championship one year, and the only tournament I had done prior the rest of that year was a local tournament back home, and the US Open. you know. So, and maybe the Gator Cup. So I had like 1,200 registered birds getting to the Nationals. I ended the year with 2,000, and had a lot of years in that time frame that I did pretty good. What I started to lose, though, was two big things. One, the ability to have a good routine when it counted and mattered, because I wasn't doing it. You know, I wasn't simulating the actual scenario, so I would more likely to get nervous. I was more sensitive to competition. Okay. You know, I just got done shooting the FITAS over there, and, you know, I didn't get nervous one single shot hardly. Why? Because I've been shooting more the last couple years, you know. Yeah. So I'm just more prepared. I know what to do when. So competition is your best way to build experience with routine and what you're doing in the box.
Now let's talk about the technical, or let's talk about that was a good topic. What about like timing in terms of between the period of time when you call pull and you're ready, you call pull and you start to move the gun? Okay, that's something that I work on quite a bit in practice. I 100% agree. I don't think there's really any way you can practice a routine at home without tournament pressure, because that changes everything.
You can at least give yourself an idea what it's going to be, but that's about it.
Right. But is that something, is that a specific thing that you ever work on a target?
Like my timing of starting my hands?
Starting your hands?
Not really. Okay. Yes and no. So I generally try to move on the flash. Okay. Move on motion. Okay. If I get a no bird, particularly on anything quick, I will have moved my hands a tiny bit. So I inherently anticipate slightly. Okay. I don't really teach too much to anticipate for most folks, unless they're at experience level where I think that that's the little thing that's holding them back. Okay.
Explain that.
Because it's a, you know, it's a slippery slope, right? You know, you told me I could start moving before the bird came out. Yeah, but if you're not,
you get a slow pull.
If you're not, get a slow pull, or you start exaggerating it. Mm-hmm. So I try to train, set my break point, go for my break point, set my hold point. My eyes stop. I don't hold my eyes too long, just enough that they stop. I see the motion come out of the trap. I start my hands. Okay. So over time, my brain has learned, okay, to kind of engage that starting my hands to break my inertia, probably, you know, slightly actually before the bird comes out of the trap. Okay. I've never trained to actually do that. I've just learned to do that. Okay. So I think that helps me say in something like FITAS, where if you can't move until the bird comes out of the trap, I don't have to think about it. Is there a time where I maybe move before the bird came out? I guess. Okay. But that's why the referee is there. I don't ever intentionally try to move early, but I don't ever try to intentionally move, you know, clearly after the clay came out of the machine.
So you were
trying to move on the motion.
So you are always moving the gun at some speed, is what you're saying.
Yep.
Yep. And so the reason I kind of brought that up, Justin and I were shooting yesterday, and that's something we really worked on, is I know you're the same way. You'll see a lot of people that will call pull, and their eyes are back towards the machine, their gun is out wherever they're holding it, and, you know, say a quick bird, or say something that really is not that quick, that you have to shoot quick. They rush everything. Their timing is so fast that they actually end up being quicker. The bird's quicker, the gun, their eyes, their hands is all quicker than the bird themselves.
Right. And, no, I agree with that.
And so I guess that's kind of the point.
There's more
time
than people think. If you can get in sync with the target and you're moving actually with a good hold point and you see the motion, there's more time than most people feel. You know, and that's really one of the differences that, you know, when somebody shoots an incredible score and you go, how in the world did he shoot that? Because the game felt a lot different to him than it felt to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know,
everything felt slow and easy.
You know, even even myself, you know, if I had a rough day and I look at his score and go, Jesus, okay, that's damn good shooting. You know, that guy felt like he did it pretty easily, you know, and I felt like I had to work real hard that day to be a couple birds behind him.
Yeah. How do you slow a bird down? Can't you slow one down?
I mean, you slow the bird down to get that feel of, you know, the gun and the bird, you know, feeling like you have plenty of time. Gun speed is the first step. that to get the gun and the bird to slow down. Okay, the only thing you perceive in life in general are differences in speed. Okay, it's the same reason why you go down the runway feels fast and you're up in the air on an airplane feels slow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're going much faster when you're closer to the ground, so you recognize the difference between the ground going zero and your plane going 200 miles an hour. Versus when you're up in the air, your plane's going 500, okay, and yeah. you feel like you're floating, okay. So your brain actually, I think, is a very poor judge of speed, okay, good or bad, okay. So why is that good? Well, if you're in sync with the bird, it's going to feel you recognize the difference between your barrel and the target. So the thing that a lot of the best shooters do different than the average Joe is they got the gun in sync with the bird. Sooner, longer, quicker, whatever, okay, at the moment that it needs to be in sync with the bird. There's a lot of those birds, like on that blue course yesterday, if you're not in sync with the bird early, you're not going to be able to kill it soon enough, okay? So a lot of folks, they think, I can't shoot that fast. You're right. You can't shoot that fast because you're not in sync with the bird soon enough. So the bird feels like a streak to them when they're shooting it because their eyes, the last step is your eyes getting onto the target. But you can't get your eye onto the clay till the gun is positioned where it needs to go. So a lot of those birds took a lot of space in front to hit them, and you didn't have a lot of time. So you need to get the gun out in front with a lot of space early, okay? Then your eye can lock in for a fraction of a second as you take the shot. But if the gun's not in front or not in that, therefore, if it's in front, that's allowing the gun and the bird to move the same speed. Your eyes aren't ever going to slow the bird down. It's going to feel like a rocket ship.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. That was very well put.
That's kind of what I was experiencing.
Very right. well put.
You know what you wanted to do, but
yeah.
There's no way your eyes could actually deliver that shot consistently the way the shot felt to you.
Yeah.
Okay. It was like, yeah. There's the sweet spot, but I ain't ready. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I asked you earlier, you're shooting 1 ounce shells.
Shooting the Winchester 1 ounce, 1290, mostly eights. I shoot feet tests. I shoot all 7.5s just to keep it simple. This is just the logic that I use. You know, why people ask me, why would you shoot all 7.5s in feet tests? Just simply because in feet tests, if I had the same bird, okay, and you felt like as a second shot, you might want a 7.5. You know, I don't want to ever think that I would miss it on the first shot. So I don't ever want to put in an 8 and a 7.5. Okay,
yeah.
So I just put in 7.5s, both barrels, and shoot all 7.5s in feet tests. Sporting, you know, I just haven't got my mind around shooting all 7.5s. I like 8s. Like on that blue course, I didn't shoot any 7.5s. I shot 7.5s on the rabbits just because I always put a 7.5 on a rabbit just to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
But I shot all 8s on the rest of the course.
And you're not shooting any 1 1/8 at all?
No, just 1 ounce.
You know, I've heard it be told that in years past, you know, you went to a World Feet Task 1 year and on a single – that you loaded one shell and just shot one shell, and someone asked you, why did you just load one shell when the rules allow you to shoot two? And your answer, I thought, was pretty cool. This is just hearsay. I don't think I've ever heard it out of your mouth.
There's a feat. It was in 2011 at the World. There's a shoot off with me and Greg Wolf. It's online. I shoot one. You got this single a couple times. I hit more than I missed, but it was tough. Like kind of diving in. I felt like you had one good shot to hit the bird, okay? So I wanted to be confident that I was going to hit it there, and I didn't want to be tempted to shoot sooner. So if I, you know, two bad shots, you know, aren't better than one good shot. And I feel like that was the only spot that it really gave you time. And if I try to get off a first shot, I run the risk that I'm not going to get my good second shot, and I just wanted to be confident that I'm going to kill it with that one shot right there. And I'll still do that to this day. You know, put one. You know,
really?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll put two in, but I'll just shoot one shot. I did it at the World Feet Test this past year. The guy asked me what was wrong with my gun. The referee's like, is gun malfunction? I'm like, no. Okay.
Yeah.
I just played one shot. Okay. He goes, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I need two. That's for sure. Talk about that for a second. World Feet Task,
mm-hmm.
here in Mississippi, and you won.
Yep. So, look, you know, at the end of the day, the governing body decided that they're going to post a world championship title, and somebody's going to be able to put it on their resume. So why not take it?
Right, right.
Why not be the guy that puts it on their resume? Look, at the end of the day, do I want to win another one when we get a bigger crowd of people, et cetera? Yeah. But I had my mind set as soon as they said that we're going to do it, that it's going to be an easier one to win than some other years, and I'm going to hit every damn bird that I can. I'm going to be ready for it, you know. Mm-hmm. And was evident in my score that I won by six clays, right, or something like that, roughly.
You know, a lot of people were saying it's not going to be the world championship, but
well, guess what? The governing body gave it away, and right, I got a patch that's from the governing body that says world champion. Yep. Okay,
you know, that's so, what counts.
Yeah. And you can say what you want. Okay, right. I don't really care. You know, it's on my resume. It did a few things on my resume. You know, I'm the first person to win the world sporting, the world feat test, the U.S. Open, and the national championship. So if anything else, it just screwed somebody else being able to put that on their title. Okay, which I'm proud of. Yeah. So you know, I was the first guy to win the U.S. Open, the nationals, and the world sporting. So I'm the first guy to win the U.S. Open, the nationals, world sporting, the world feat test.
Who?
So at the end of my shooting career, you know, I got about another 20 good years, and I'm going to hang it up. You know, things like that. You know, nobody can ever take
right
that away from you.
Yeah,
you know,
that's so right. Who's closest in line to doing it? What you just did?
Bobby Fowler's won the World Sporting, the U.S. Open, and the Nationals. Corey has won the World Sporting, the U.S. Open, and the Nationals.
Okay.
Derek's won the Nationals. He won the whatever the organization has a world sporting.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people compete in that one. Okay. I've never even competed in that world.
Is that the one in Ireland?
They had in Canada, Ireland. It's kind of a conflict between the two governing bodies. But Derek's won the Nationals twice. He's won the World Fitness, and he's won the, you know, the one off world sporting, but he's never won the US Open. So he would, you know, the CPSA, NSCA World Sporting, he could add, plus the U.S. Open. David's won the U.S. Open and the World FITES, no World Sporting or no U.S. Open, yeah, or no national championship. So there's a few people that are right there, you know. But, you know, you why it was important to me is, you know,
right,
a lot of people can add it, but you can't be first, you know. So
if you're – I mean, if they're advertising it as a world championship, then it is what it is.
It is what it
you
is.
You know, what's next? Where are you
for
going?
For me?
Yeah, I mean.
I'm going to – you know, I just kind of last year, you know, made my mind up that I spent the last – from 2010 to 2020 working a whole ton and not really – I kind of just rode on my experience, and I would train right for before a big competition, you know. Didn't shoot a lot of competitions. You can look at my shooting history, not a lot of registered targets. I'm going to, you know, what I want to do is just keep myself in the game a little bit more than I have in the last 10 years prior. And I had a lot of good years from 2010 to 2020, but just getting away with it based upon my experience and working hard in practice right before I'd go out and practice for 4 weeks or 5 weeks before the Nationals or U.S. Open and, you know, shoot, you know, 1,000 rounds a week for 4 or 5 weeks and get ready and had some real good placements. But right now, like, I didn't practice. I shot about 500 shells since the World FITES for coming here, but that's it, you know. But I feel as good in my shooting as ever. And part of it is just having my foot in the door with competition, you know. So
yeah,
I'm going to keep doing a little bit more competition than I had over the last 10 years. That's what next. And we'll see what happens, you know.
So your coaching business is still strong.
Yeah, it's crazy. I can go anybody that, you know, just booking a lesson with me, they know when I send them the dates that are available. It's very, very strong. I have you know, a lot of repeat business. My new DVD that I released last year has driven a lot of business to me. I have folks that watch it. I have 4 or 5 folks stop me here that I never met before and just say, hey, I want to thank you for that DVD. I learned stuff in my game. I've been doing this for 10 years, and you actually really – I proved my game just off watching that video. You know,
right.
I'd like to come take a lesson with you sometime if, you know, resources allow and time allows. So that's driven even more business to me that I didn't necessarily need, but it's a good problem. So, yeah, I could book 7 days a week, 8-10 hours a day, 365 days a year without even thinking about it. That's how how busy I am.
That's so great. I think
I mean, what do you block off? Like, all right, this I'm going to the Gator Cup right here.
Yeah, just block it off.
You block
know,
it off.
I could tell you, you know, I've scheduled my whole year, like, you know, now, you know, so or January. So I already know what I'm doing in November and December because, I mean, I've got weeks full in December, you know, right
yeah.
now. You know, so that's how, you know, I have some regular folks that book, you know, hey, I'm going to come once a month. I'm going to come every 2 months. I'm going to come every quarter, come twice a year. And they kind of get in a habit of, see what happens with my schedule, which is, you know, it's a problem. It's a good problem, but it's a problem nonetheless, is once you're busy and people realize that it's not that easy to, you know, just come next month and get a lesson or even the following month, they start scheduling out. So the people start contacting me in November and December. They go, I want to book next year when you open it up. So I'll get an email and the guy will say, all right, you know, these are my 12. I want one every month, you know, or I want every quarter, or I want, you know. So when that's the case, it just keeps getting further out, okay, because the demand drives the, drives the scheduling, you know. So it is what it is, you know. Over time, I'm going to teach less, though. You know, I've taught a whole lot since 2007. Basically, every single hour I could possibly squeeze in. And I'm still doing it this spring. I'm basically full this spring, and I got people that I give lessons to. I'm like, all right, come at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Okay, you know. So, you know, I'm going 8 till 7 or 8 till you know. In the summertime, I do a lot of fishing, but I'll come home, work 3-4 days in a week, you know, and I'll go 8 to 8, you know, nonstop, back to back to back, you know. At the end of the day, I'm selling time, so might as well sell all you can, you know. But over time, I have to cut my schedule a little bit. A couple reasons. One, I can't maintain, you know, another, you know, what I did for the last 13 years being out there. I mean, I've went periods of time where I'll go 2 months, 7 days a week, average, you know, just call it an average of 9 hours a day, and if it's spring or something like that, so 9 hours a day, 60 hours a week, 60 days straight, okay?
Yeah.
Literally, okay, you know. Wow. Besides, you know, taking a day off for a tournament or something that I went to, but I didn't shoot a lot of tournaments, you know, back in that time frame. So the money's good, but it's stressful in terms of, you know, in the morning, I turn my phone off at 7:30 in the morning. I turn my phone back on at, you know, that when I'm maintaining that type of schedule, 7:30 at night. I don't stop for lunch. I don't check my texts. Okay. I give 100% attention to the people. Do that for 60 days in a row. Okay.
You know,
it's taxing on your mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Money's good, you know, but my family business, I'm going to transition to probably 2022, devoting, you know, more, or even fall of this year, 2021, putting some time every week to be in the office working with my dad. My dad's 60 years old. Guy's, you know, worked his entire life, you know, lots and lots of years, 7 days a week.
Tell what is your family business?
We raise and sell ducks as game birds. We sell 180,000 ducks. We have a lodge where people come and stay to go hunting. We offer driven style simulated shoots, upland hunts, like a decoying duck hunt, kind of like the real thing, a duck shoot, which is like high volume shooting. We have daily sporting clays, corporate outings. We host a lot of big competitions. So we've got a big operation going on that's kind of grown over time, and it's takes a lot of, you know, it's a lot of work. So I do right now kind of all of our organization, marketing, all the getting the stuff ready for the tournaments in terms of organizing, working, then I'll work for 10 days or so, you know, around those tournaments. But I really do now more of our marketing, branding, big hunts. If we have a big hunt that we're organizing, we run a full kitchen for guests there with great meals. I actually work with my aunt sometimes in the kitchen, you know, cooking dinners, and we do a big like driven style shoot where we do like a formal lunch, you know, real nice formal lunch. I'll cook for those because I already am organizing the event for the day. So I got a lot going on, you know, and my teaching has been awesome, and I'll I'll continue to do it forever, but I won't do it. You know, if 10 years from now, I'll probably be going about 50% capacity compared to what I am now, just because I have to move more into some of the management stuff that my dad does, just because, you know, he's working, you know, more than he should be for his age. And, you know, the destruction has allowed our business for me to not draw a salary from there and still be part of my family business for, you know, since I graduated college in 2007. So that's big, because I was able to make, you know, my income, and they didn't have to, I could still work with my family business, but, you know, there's only so much piece of the pie to go around, right?
Now, how has managing, you know, all those things, you know, having a family, doing all that, how have you managed the time and continued to stay, you know, successful and teach and you know, has that been a challenge at all?
Man. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and there's definitely some time in my last 10 years of my shooting that, you know, you could talk to my wife, you know, I go, yeah, I'd be come back from a tournament so pissed off, you know, just because I didn't shoot good. And it's lack of preparation, lack of sleep, lack of, you know, desire to go train and practice, or time to go train and practice, you know. So, you know, the most important thing to me, you know, is my family, and I got three little girls, my wife, that's first, particularly in the last 13, 14 years, you know, working to save money, you know, get ahead in life, you know, and, you know, be in a good position financially, you know, that was more important to me at particularly times than, you know, running my business with my shooting school and helping my family business and doing all that. So shooting came, you know, pretty far back down the line. But at the end of the day, I'm a diehard competitor. I hate losing. Okay. I hate it, you know, and, you know, so basically I'm either going to step up and figure out how to get it done, or I'm not going to do it. Okay. I'm not going to just show up and be half-assed, because I just can't, it's not fun to me. You know, I love, you know, I want to win. So if I can't be competitive, so at the end of the day, you know, I still now even, you know, I'm building a house and I'm the general contractor. I get up 5 o'clock every morning, and I go to bed at, you know, 10:30, you know, so I come home and spend time with my kids and, you know, do that until they go to bed. And half the time, I literally lay down with my kids at 8 o'clock. They're little, you know, get them in bed, and I fall asleep. Okay. And there's probably 2 days a week that I fall asleep at 8 o'clock with them and wake up at 12. I got all this work that I got to get done. I'll go downstairs and work on my computer for 2 hours from 12 to 2, just because my mind's racing. I figure I'm not just going to lay there in bed and waste time. And then I'll be tired at 2 and lay down for another 3 hours and get up at, you know, 6 o'clock or something. So just hard work, you know, and the desire to do well, you know. It's got to, you know, not being successful has to sting bad enough to do something different about it. You know, I'm watching somebody just recently that's a good shot, and I'm watching and going, they don't care enough that they're missing, okay, you know, to do anything about it. That's the problem, you know. So their intensity's not there in their routine, etc. Trust me, I've been there, okay. You know, there's plenty of times I wanted to quit, you know, just because trying to juggle all this stuff. And, you know, if all I had to do is shoot, you know, I'd be a better shot than I am. But, you know, that's where we are, right? You know, we probably all would, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing about me is I'm, you know, shooting, the actual, you know, shooting does not do a whole lot for me. It's the competing. I just love to compete.
Right. So that has to be, you know, you got to find that down inside you, you know, to figure out, you know, and look, not every person, you know, not every person has that. Okay. It's just not, you know, it's not a negative. It's just a personality trait. To me, you know, it could be a negative to be like I am, okay, where you wake up at 12 o'clock and you go downstairs and do work. Okay, that's probably, you know, not healthy either, okay?
Yeah, that's right.
You know? But that's just how I'm wired, you know, so that's what it is, right?
You ever just get run down and just like, all right, I got to take a couple of days and just sleep? You know, I mean, not the whole day, but I'm just like, you know, it's how do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I mean, there's
how do you manage that?
You know, there's. I mean, like being here, I feel like I'm, you know,
wasting time.
Well, I feel like I'm on vacation. You know, I'm out here working hard, but it's, you know, it's a relief that I'm just kind of disconnected from what I do every day. So, yeah, I mean, I get tired all the time. I got a sleeping machine that helps, sleep apnea machine.
Man, that, awesome.
I feel a lot better when I wake up than I used to.
Yeah.
I went to my primary care doctor. He's like, you're going to have a damn heart attack. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I eat healthy and my blood pressure was high and, you know, it was related to that though. Wasn't sleeping good, but that helped, you know. When I got that thing, I was like, feel like I'm on drugs. I wake up, I slept 5 hours. I feel like I've slept for a week.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, amazing.
Compared to the way I used to feel.
Yeah.
So the thing definitely works.
You don't. You know, you
if
don't
you're
go,
debating that you need one because you snore, you need one. Okay.
You don't go. You don't go anywhere without it, do you?
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. So.
It's a little bit annoying, but it's worth it.
Yeah. You get used to it. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Anthony.
It was
appreciate
fun.
Your time, Tom.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you being here with us, and we'll catch you next shoot.
Cool. Thanks, right, guys.
Man. See you.
Yep.